This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. There were competing political demonstrations in Hong Kong today. School teachers marched in support of pro-democracy activists who have been staging demonstrations for almost 3 months and against police brutality. Feng Weihua was one of the march leaders.
We want to protect our students, our youngsters. So teachers are willing to come out and speak for the youngster and also stand by them so that they are not alone.
Across Victoria Harbour, a pro-government rally called for an end to the often violent anti-government protests. More are scheduled through the weekend in the Chinese semi-autonomous territory. Last weekend's action at Hong Kong Airport spilled over into the work week, crippling one of the busiest air travel hubs for several days, sparking clashes between demonstrators and riot police. In the northwestern U.S. state of Oregon, more than two dozen local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies are in Portland to help deal with a radical right-wing rally scheduled for later today. AP correspondent Mike Hempen has a report.
The rally is being organized by a member of the Proud Boys and is expected to include the American Guard, the Three Percenters, and the Daily Stormers. The Southern Poverty Law Center has designated the Proud Boys as a hate group and the others as a white nationalist group, an anti-government militia, and a neo-Nazi group. Local anti-fascist protesters will also likely be there to oppose the right-wing groups. Portland Police Lieutenant Tina Jones tells KOIN-TV the department wants to ensure public safety.
Law enforcement personnel's role is to protect and serve the public, and this is done neutrally.
Portland officers will be assisted by lawmen from more than two dozen other agencies. I'm Mike Hempen.
Iconic American film actor Peter Fonda has died after suffering respiratory failure from lung cancer. He died at his home in Los Angeles. Peter Fonda was 79. From Washington, this is VOA News. The UN Human Rights Office is condemning a Friday crackdown by riot police in Zimbabwe for the way they dealt with peaceful protesters in the capital, Harare. Lisa Schlein in Geneva reports for VOA the agency wants an investigation.
UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville says there are better ways to deal with the population's legitimate grievances on the economic situation in the country than by cracking down on peaceful protesters.
We're deeply concerned by the socioeconomic crisis that continues to unfold in Zimbabwe. While acknowledging efforts made by the government, the international community, and the UN in Zimbabwe to mitigate the effects of the crisis and reform process, the dire economic situation is now impacting negatively on the realization of economic and social rights of millions of Zimbabweans.
Lisa Schlein filed that report for VOA from Geneva. Media organizations in Australia are charging the country has become a secretive state that is actively restricting press freedom. The chiefs of Australia's major newspapers and broadcasters made the claim at the first public hearing of a parliamentary inquiry. From Sydney, here is Phil Mercer for VOA.
Media chiefs are calling for so-called public interest protections, for reporters to be able to tell sensitive stories without fear of prosecution. Michael Miller, the executive chairman of News Corp Australasia, says national security concerns are unfairly outweighing the public's right to know.
We may not be living in a police state, but we are living in a state of secrecy. We have many laws that criminalise journalism. They are creating a secret society that most Australians would not recognise as our own.
Senior Australian federal police officers have insisted the raids on the media in June were in defence of national security, and that the compromise of sensitive material could cause exceptionally grave damage or serious damage to Australia's interests. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
India has begun restoring telephone service in Kashmir. The Indian-controlled Muslim section of the disputed Himalayan region has been under lockdown since early this month, when New Delhi deployed tens of thousands of additional troops to Kashmir as it cut off landlines, mobile phones, and the internet and stripped the Muslim majority of its autonomy. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We are pleased that the Western government, USA and other like democratic governments in the world, they will respect the Sudanese choices in making these revolutions. And Sudan is coming to a very fruitful time in the history.
Sudanese opposition coalition and the Transitional Military Council signed a power-sharing deal Saturday.
Frankly speaking, if people are killing others in that region, it's not up to the sultan to take care of the local population. This is the mandate of the republic.
A Chadian opposition leader says President Idris Deby's recent sultan appointment deviate from tradition, creating tension and violence.
For years, I have talked about income disparity, especially in the public sector. And when we are the public policy makers, we should make policies in a way that benefits the country and the people generally.
And a Liberian senator asked his colleagues to sacrifice for the nation. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Sudanese main opposition coalition and the Transitional Military Council signed a power-sharing deal in the capital Khartoum Saturday. The deal effectively paves the way for a new governing council. It will comprise 6 civilians and 5 from the military ahead of the next elections. The power-sharing deal followed months of protests due to what organizers said was the high rising price of fuel. The demonstrations led to the toppling of the government of President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. Reacting to the landmark power-sharing deal, Dr. Mohamed Al Ansari, a leading member of the opposition Umar Party, told me citizens of Sudan are optimistic about the future.
Umar Party is a part of a declaration of freedom and change, which is a group leading the revolution in Sudan, and they managed to kick the previous regime and remove Bashir. And now this agreement, which highlighted the major important milestones which Sudan's are coming across. We have 3 slogans which December Revolution raised: freedom, peace, and justice. These 3 slogans is very important now to put it in reality and try to implement it in a form of equal residentship and equal partnership between Sudanese people to build the country.
Now that this deal has been signed, what are the expectations of the Umar Party as part of this opposition coalition in this agreement?
As Umar Party, we are very optimistic about what is coming. So we reach an agreement which it can guarantee and sustain the civilian rule in Sudan. One of the major obstacles holds Sudan back on the last 30 years, which is a military coup and military regimes. Now Sudan, it will be led by civilian government, and that civilian government can negotiate a peace agreement with the armed forces and can sustain a system that can guarantee good governance, implementing peace, and delivering justice in a very systematic and equal way. At this moment, Sudanese people are very optimistic, and Sudanese people now are in the streets celebrating this agreement, and all people in Sudan now are very happy about future of the country, because we are pleased now all our neighboring countries, they will treat us as the friends, not as the enemy. We are pleased that the Western government, USA and other like democratic government in the world, they will respect the Sudanese choices in making these revolutions, and Sudan is coming to a very fruitful time in the history.
Talking about optimism about this agreement, does that include the commitment of the Transitional Military Council to abide or keep its word and ensure the full implementation of this agreement?
So now the Military Council role, it will be ended by forming the council that will lead Sudan in the next era, because Military Council is covers the period between Sudanese people leaving, removing the last regime. The prime minister already it has been selected, and this prime minister will form his government, and we have a presidential council which will be oversight the government, and also we have parliament will like implement these rules. We have a true and genuine system which can lead civilian to rule and control the government.
What about the issue of human rights? Remember during the demonstrations, quite a number of people were killed. If this new prime minister is installed next week, will the UMA party demand immediate investigation and punishment of those masterminds behind this human rights violations?
Yes, accountability is very important in the new Sudan. One of the main reasons that it holds Sudan back, and also it created dishonest between Sudanese people in ruling the government or controlling the country, which is the abuse of austerities, human rights abuse, and all behaviors that conducted by the previous regime or by the security forces in Sudan. Yes, we will keep all people accountable, all people. Already we have a system to hold a fair trial, and we will not take revenge.
Dr. Mohamed Al Ansari is a leading member of the Sudanese opposition party, UMA. He spoke with me from London. The leader of the Chadian opposition party, the Transformers, says President Idriss Deby should widely consult elders in the area before appointing any new sultan. Success Masra says recent appointments appear to have deviated from the tradition, which he says creates tension and in some cases violence. His remarks came after opposition groups accused the president of interfering in the tradition after he appointed a new sultan of Wydai. To learn more about their concerns, I reached Success Masra, leader of the Chadian opposition party, the Transformers.
This is a very big issue in this country. The sultanate of Wydai is one of the oldest kind of sultanate in this country. And before the independence of this country, and even when you consider from the independence to date, more than six presidents, including the current president, came in power. We didn't have this kind of problem. The problem is that the power in Jamena wants to impose a candidate. And this is not the first time it is happening. It happened even in the southern part of Chad, named Sar, where they wanted to create a sultanate. The population didn't agree with this. There was even a kind of a local referendum saying that they didn't want this candidate. But the president decided that this one was his candidate. And what is happening now in Wydai is the same situation, basically. And it shows that the power in Jamena is just applying the cynic rule of dividing to rule the country.
The president, I understand, has the power to appoint a sultan, and that is what he has done. As an opposition leader, why do you disagree with the power that he has?
It's not a matter of the power that he has. It is the abuse of the power, because this is a tradition. And when you say tradition, it means that people have some traditional rules of appointing, you know, of considering their leader at local level. So we are not opposing the fact that he can appoint. But this is a country where, basically, even the president, he appointed himself as a sultan in his own village. It shows you the sense of, you know, the leadership you have in this country. And what is going on there is the result of a long kind of conflict. From 2016 to 2018, more than 100 people died. And from the beginning of this year, 2019, almost 100 people died from the conflict in this part of our country. And instead of resolving the problem, so they decided to change the sultan now. And instead of, you know, putting in place, considering the wise people on the ground, considering the opinion of the population, they are trying kind of to impose someone. I think the best thing to do as a leader is to make sure that you create a dialogue so that people can discuss. And, you know, it's about leading people on the ground.
The president suspended six of the sultans for incompetence, and he wants to put somebody in place who is competent and who is able to address the needs of the people in that part of the country. So how do you reconcile that with your proposal?
I mean, you know, this is just the world. The problem is that the Sultan, they don't have weapons. They don't have the army. They don't have the police. If you are in a concrete and a serious country, it's the Ministry of Administration and Police who is going to resign. But instead of doing that, the president is trying to find someone and to give a sanction to someone on the ground. This is why he decided that it should be the Sultan. But frankly speaking, if people are killing others in that region, it's not up to the Sultan to take care of the local population. This is the mandate of the Republic.
So, Success, why would you go in the street with your party officials going to hand over flags to Chadians without going through the appropriate channels?
It was just to put a few number of our members at the corner of the street and to give just the flag to the people, actually. So there was no need for us to request an authorization, because it was not a demonstration. It was not a kind of public kind of gathering in big number. Even though we should, say this to stress something, people should understand that, you know, across the country, some, they go for demonstration, for protest. They don't need even some authorization to do that. But for us, it was just to give flag to the people, you know. It was the National Day, and we just went there to give the flag to other people. And when I came out of my car to give the flag, the police just started shooting us, and more than 12 cars of the police, full of policemen, were just, you know, they came and they basically, our headquarters was like, you know, we were in a situation of war, actually. And this is not normal in a democratic country.
Success Masra is the leader of the Chadian opposition party, the Transformers. He spoke with me from the capital in N'Djamena. A Liberian senator is calling on lawmakers and other senior government officials to make sacrifices to help save money for the country's development. Abraham Darius Dillon says Liberia needs to cut spending and save money due to economic challenges facing the country. He also said he has asked for his monthly salary as a lawmaker be divided into two. Dillon favors taking $5,000 and depositing $10,000 to be used for social development in his constituency. He told me it is not fair for public sector workers to make all the financial sacrifices while government officials are handsomely rewarded for their work.
I believe that it is during this period national leaders should craft national policies for national good. It's time that we make the sacrifice for our country and our people. Slash our money. If what it is said that lawmakers make over 10,000 to 15,000, let's make the sacrifice. I am urging my colleagues to please, let's take 5,000 every month and return the rest of the money so that government can use that money for the people and the country. Why we are finding means to improve our economy. So that is why I am starting with this sacrifice as an example. And I mean it from my heart that I will only accept a salary and income benefit and all put together in a sum of $5,000. And any amount over that will be put in an escrow account that will be managed by the county so that we can assist with little projects and other humanitarian issues here and there until this thing becomes a national policy where we slash money across government.
Are you expecting your colleagues at the Senate to follow your lead? And so far, what has been the response from them?
This, I believe, is a positive move. It is nationalistic, and I'm looking forward to my colleagues. We are 103 in the legislature of Liberia. If we slash for money, we can save about $1 million every month and about $12 million or more every year that can go to the public health sector, our education sector, the agriculture. And if this policy goes across the executive and the judiciary, we'll be saving about $40 million every year that we can put back into our country and our people. And I will be encouraging my colleagues, and I will be calling on the people of Liberia to impress upon the legislature, especially because we, as lawmakers, we determine who gets what. And if we have the courage to reduce our money, and then we have the courage to reduce other people's money, including the president's money, including all other government officials who are making at least over $10,000 a month so that we can put it back into our country and our people. Because our country and our people deserve it. They deserve better.
One of the reasons why you are taking such a step is because of the poor prevailing economic conditions. If the economy improves, will you go back and accept what lawmakers are making, or you think this is too much and that even when the economy improves, lawmakers should be paid $5,000 with the $10,000 put in an escrow account to develop parts of the country?
When we set in place policies that will improve our economy, it will make sense that we can make some incremental increases everywhere. I cannot imagine taking home $10,000 or $15,000 every month and paying a teacher $150 every month, and that teacher will have to work for 10 and a half years before that teacher or that policeman or that health worker or that civil servant can realize what I will take home every month. It doesn't make sense to me. To me, it's just hopeless.
Dylan, what do you say to your critics who are saying that this is just a mere publicity exercise to make you look good and make your other colleagues look bad and greedy, and that because you recently won by election, you just want to make noise for people to recognize you and to win the next election? Your response to that?
Long before I became a senator by the blessing of the votes of our people, I've always talked about income disparity gap in the country. When I was a staff in the legislature a few years ago, we fought together for staff incentives to be improved. And thankfully, it was improved from $27 a month to $150 a month. Now I'm a senator. I'm asking that we reduce ours because we are the leaders. The leaders should lead in a way that the people and the country will be happy. And then all of us together, we are happy. This is not a political stunt. For years, I have talked about income disparity, especially in the public sector. And when we are the public policy makers, we should make policies in a way that it benefits the country and the people generally.
Abraham Darius Dylan is a Liberian senator. He spoke with me from the capital, Monrovia.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The leader of the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum, a political pressure group, has sharply condemned what he says was an attempt on his life and that of his family. Timothy Ntambo says unnamed individuals threw petrol bombs at his sleeping household. Critics, however, say the incident appeared to have been state-managed to appear to look like supporters of the ruling party were behind the alleged attack. To learn more about the alleged attack, I read Timothy Ntambo, leader of the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum.
Some criminals and thugs came to my residence around 2 a.m. and they threw three petrol bombs at my house premises. As I speak, my car was torched, and fortunately we came out and controlled the fire before it affected the house. I was in the house with my kids and the entire family, and that pained me that somebody was looking for my life. Then it was very, very unfortunate that that person would even sacrifice to kill myself and my children for committing no crime, but for demanding accountability and the demand for good governance in our country. So I confirm that really happened.
Have you reported this incident to the Malawi police, and has investigation begun?
I reported this matter to the Malawi police, and even last year we had the same incident at my office where they petrol bombed and attacked our guards. We reported the same to the police. Up to date, we have not had any progress. So the challenge that we have here in Malawi is that the trust of the police has become a problem. And as I speak, people are worried as to whether the police is going to bring out anything that will inspire confidence in the public And as I speak, citizens of this country are very bitter. The situation is actually very volatile. So we would want the police to demonstrate and probably inspire confidence in the citizens by making sure that justice prevails. If that does not happen, then we would expect an independent institution like the Malawi Human Rights Commission to have an independent investigation in the matter.
Timothy, some people are expressing concern that you have been one of the main masterminds organizing a series of demonstrations that they see as trying to destabilize the country and plunge the country into chaos, although they said what happened to you last night was unfortunate. How do you respond to that?
That's totally untrue. In fact, we have been organizing peaceful marches. Citizens of this country have been demanding electoral accountability. But our government is not responsive, is not democratic. Our government is dictatorial. And as I speak, much as people have cried for the past 2 months, taking it to the streets, demanding electoral accountability, demanding the resignation of Jen Ansah. Jen Ansah has never responded and the president has been quiet. And we have had pockets of violence which we have condemned as human rights defenders, but we know that those people are deliberately sent by the ruling party to cause confusion so that it should appear as if demonstrators are violent. The police actually have been deliberately provoking the demonstrators to be violent.
Timothy, some people are saying that if your group, or for that matter, you have concluded that DPP or ruling party supporters are behind this attack, then why call for an independent investigation since you have already concluded that, you know, they might have been guilty in carrying out this attack? Why not allow the independent investigation to carry out, to punish the perpetrators?
Thank you very much. We have given the hint to the police because, like, the past week, we have received a lot of threats. Actually, most of the threats were directed on me, death threats for that matter, and we have not seen any sort of condemnation from the government. And as I speak, there were some WhatsApp groups where people were discussing, the DPP cadets were discussing on how best they can deal with me. And people have those numbers and have tried to find out who are behind, which names are behind those numbers. And it's clear it is the cadets that are actually behind those numbers. So what we're saying is that we want them to investigate those numbers. Because it's not a coincidence that this week people are discussing on how to kill me. And the same week, you see people attacking my house. So we are saying we have not concluded to say they are responsible. It is an allegation. We are raging because of their behavior, the way they have been behaving, attacking people, and the way they have been discussing even how best they can assassinate me. So we are saying this is an allegation, and we want the police actually to investigate them to make sure that by the end of the day, justice prevails.
Timothy Ntambu is the leader of the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Forum. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe.
Yes, just say yes to the weekend. Hi, everybody. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Let me help you maximize your weekend with a beautiful musical journey across the continent. This Sunday features music by artists like Simi, Tyra RV, Wande Cole, Catch Them Young Salon. Song of the Week takes you to Uganda with Masaka Kids Africana. And we pay a tribute to Ivorian King of Coupe de Calais, the late DJ Arafat. So this weekend, tune in with me this Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC on Music Time in Africa.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Zimbabwean police got a court approval for their ban of an opposition planned protest in Harare's central business district. But some of the demonstrators showed up anyway to decry the country's economic meltdown. Security forces beat them with batons, used tear gas to disperse them, and arrested dozens. For VOA reporter Zvena Vashi has the details from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
The build-up to the planned protests was characterized by abductions and torture of opposition and civic society members and political grandstanding between government wings and the opposition. Yesterday evening, government notified the opposition that the demonstrations were not authorized. Zimbabwe Republic Police Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyati appeared on national television advising the public not to join in.
The regulating authority for Harare Central District, who is also the officer commanding Harare Central District, has issued a prohibition notice after a consultative process which ended this afternoon. Anyone who is going to participate or to engage in the so-called demonstrations tomorrow will be committing an offense.
The last-minute ban of the protest prompted the opposition to quickly seek an audience with the courts. Tendai Biti, vice president of the opposition movement for democratic change, shared his disappointment at the court's ruling to uphold the prohibition and encouragement for the opposition to seek recourse in lower courts.
We appeared this morning before Justice Musaka. We argued very strongly that the issuance of the prohibition order was unlawful. We differ respectfully with the ruling of the High Court. We will not appeal to the Magistrate Court because we do not accept the correctness with great respect of the ruling by the High Court of Zimbabwe.
The court order and heavy police presence didn't stop some of the people who had already answered the opposition call to demonstrate. Everson Moyo was one of the participants.
This is based on the current economic situation in this country, whereby everything is just getting from bad to worse on a daily basis. I believe that it's high time that we as citizens are involved in the future for our country, because leaving politicians and individuals to determine and decide the way forward for our country is not just an ideal thing to do.
Opposition leader Nelson Chamisa said the police's handling of the notification to protests in Harare was deceptive and a betrayal of the hope that flourished after long-time leader Robert Mugabe was forced out of office.
So what is clear is that we have seen scenes and circumstances of extreme brutality by the police, especially against the ordinary people. We have had over 80 people arrested. The number is still increasing because we are recording the information as it is coming. We've also received cases of abductions since Tuesday. What is clear is that it's turning out that the regime in Harare is far worse than the Mugabe regime.
Chamisa, who claims he was robbed of victory in 2018 presidential elections, says planned protests will proceed in other towns, and that today's action was a hint of what's to come. Meanwhile, the aftermath of today's protests will play out in the courts for those who were arrested today. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In Cape Town, South Africa, you may happen upon a military patrol. That is because the country's National Defense Force has been deployed to major gang hotspots in the popular tourist city. The aim is to help police bring down the high murder rates plaguing certain communities there. For VOA, Yashira Rampensad has more from Johannesburg.
There are on average about 40 murders reported in Cape Town almost every weekend. Authorities say gang violence is to blame. After many cries for help from affected communities, Police Minister Becky Cele deployed troops to the city last month.
That is not an ideal world to send soldiers to communities. Let's all agree on that. That's why we all agree that it's temporary. But for now, in a structured form, the communities have said they welcome the presence of the army here.
However, the murder rate only decreased over two weekends and then spiked again.
We would have loved that the stabilization had happened in much lesser numbers. You remember one weekend, we were 25 murders that happened, and we have gone back to 40s. But it looks like that's a number that has stayed on, which is a very high number for murders.
The Premier of the Western Cape Province, Alan Windey, says he's awaiting a report from the National Police Department detailing what they are actually doing and how the troops are working on the ground. This may help authorities decide on a different approach.
You can see some arrests are going up, but I'm not seeing the decline in murder rate. As you say, that number of 47 is still way, way, way too high. I was expecting to see the numbers coming down nicely. We've got the military in the hotspot areas. These are the 10 hotspots where gangsterism is at its highest. We've got to make sure that we try different things.
Authorities say the military presence is a temporary one while they buy time to get more police officers on the ground. Meanwhile, community members who mostly live in fear have mixed reactions to the deployment.
I should stay more hours and patrol every night the streets because they shoot every night. That's very dangerous.
No, we know that because the army come hit us every day when they come here. They're hitting the people and the people are scared to call my cases because they will come back and hit us again.
The police minister has assured Capetonians that everything is being done to stop the killings. He's warned criminals that police are not afraid to wage war if needed. I'm Yashira Rampasad for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Tackling the illegal trade in endangered wild fauna and flora and strengthening trade rules for fisheries, timber, and exotic pets are just a few of the many controversial and emotional issues to be discussed over the next 2 weeks at a worldwide conference opening in Geneva Saturday. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Thousands of delegates are expected to gather at Geneva's cavernous Palexpo Exhibition Center. They will be lobbying for their pet wildlife projects through elaborate imaginative displays and persuasive talk fests. The 183 parties to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, or CITES, is hosting this extravaganza. CITES sets the rules for international trade in wild animals and plants. Governments interested in changing the levels of protection that CITES provides have submitted 56 new proposals for discussion. These, says CITES, range from proposals to ensure trade in at-risk species remains sustainable to calls for a ban on trade in species threatened by extinction. One of the hot-button issues on the agenda is that of the conservation of African elephants. Chief of CITES Scientific Services, Tom de Mulliner, says the debate on trade in elephant ivory has been raging for 25 years. He says three new proposals will be under debate.
Two of them are coming from southern African countries, and they seek to liberate or to open up trade in ivory again. There is a third proposal from other countries in Africa, which is in competition with this one because it seeks to close all trade in ivory. Obviously, these three proposals are not compatible and will be subject of deliberations by the COP.
The conference also will consider new wildlife trade rules on an array of mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, and plants. A topic likely to generate a lot of interest is whether to exempt musical instruments made of precious wood from trees protected by CITES. Bass guitars, violins, clarinets, and other musical instruments are made wholly or partially from rosewood and other precious woods. Organizers promise a fascinating debate with prominent members of the music industry. One of the overarching problems threatening the survival of many wild animals and plants is that of illegal international trade in wildlife. CITES warns the growing involvement of organized crime groups increases the risks faced by enforcement officers such as park rangers. The conference is not just a talking shop. It has teeth. CITES is a legally binding treaty, so officials say anything decided at the conference will have a concrete impact on citizens, businesses, and governments in 90 days when the new rules come into effect. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Perhaps you might have heard of the saying, if your dreams do not scare you, they are not big enough. Well, that doesn't apply to 15-year-old Hope Emmanuel Frank, a self-taught mechanical engineer who once dreamt of building his own excavator, and now he's done it. Viewer's Pauline Diho has this report.
Nigerian teenager Hope Emmanuel Frank is a budding self-taught engineer who lives in a remote town in Thousand, Nigeria. His ability to invent earth-moving equipment using wood and syringes is remarkable. Frank used his passion for inventing to design this mini caterpillar excavator. He discovered his love for engineering when he was just 5 years old. Frank manually controls his excavator using syringes, plungers, and wires as hydraulics to get his homemade machine to scoop sand and dump sand.
I like creation. I like people who are inventors. So I did the Yonju practicum because from what I know, they say that inventors tried for many times and still failed. I did that, but I still failed. I did this for 1 year before I succeeded it.
Frank's latest invention has made him a mini celebrity in his neighborhood, and it's paying off as a sign of their support.
They tell me about this small boy. Say he's trying to fix an excavator that I see for Europe that I come see here. So I'm very, very grateful. I'm happy about this small boy.
Frank wants to study engineering, but he lacks the necessary funds, and there is no college or university nearby where he can study to realize his dreams. But despite the challenges, he remains optimistic.
The materials here in Europe, you don't have such DC here in Akwa Ibom State, so you need to import it, create your account online to import the materials here. So my biggest challenge is money.
Hope Frank's mini excavator isn't ready for prime time just yet, but he believes with the right support and opportunity, he can become one of Africa's greatest innovators, and his dream can one day become a reality. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You're hearing Mboso with Majaba. Juliana Kanyamozi follows with I'm Still Here. P-Square featuring Two Face with Possibility will come up next. And then Yvonne Chaka Chaka ends it all for us with Let Me Be Free.
Vidore na simamia, ukingoni na fikishwa. Nani kosha mwili kwa maji ya madafu. Yendo koja, nana nifuza kucheza rafu. Anichua tumbo langiri kwa mafuta ya karafu. Nikichoka, ana nikanda kwa mabarafu. Majabu, majabu, penzi lake la jabu. Majabu, majabu. Paka harua, mikono tende anazi chambua, anilamba. Kitandani humwaga maua, mingine hata tembe sikuwa najua, antoa ushamba. Oh,
ndani take nini kwake niombe sipewe iwe pemba machake chake mchague mwenyewe kanipa pombe roho yake ninywe nilewe mambo shegani mwake mwake mangaka msewe libandike kenzi kama gazeti walisome tuadabishe sangara shombo vipweti tuamone nikila nilishe chapati za alizeti ninone tuwafungishe midomo uzi simenti tuwashone nani kosha mwili kwa maji ya madafu yendo kocha na nani funza kucheza anichua tumbo la ngiri kwa mafuta ya karafu nikichoka anani kanda kwa mabarafu majabu
who made it possible?
Who made it possible? Who made it possible?
Only God made it possible.
God made it possible. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Girl, I wish, say, wish, say, I fit, say, fit, say. You too find past my mama, but that is impossible. No, thumbs up to your mama, cause she made it possible. Yeah. Girl, you too find it. My girl, I still believe, say, I fit, say, fit, say. You too find past my mama, but that is impossible.
Impossible.
No, give me the photocopy of your mama, carbon copy of your papa too.
But people still believe, say, that it's nothing like an African beauty. We did the Yancey, that it's beauty in the African system. African swing are the best. When it comes to beauty, man, we they run the rest. Nobody fit try, you go to beauty, send the less. Nevertheless, the plus can't call us fed the less. Now you know, say, now you're my mind. Your papa, this no be small matter. Are you feeling me too, Baba?
Somebody say,
ooh, girl,
you are my African queen, the girl of my dream. Took me where I never been. You make my heart go tingling, tingling, tingling.
Girl, I don't wish, say, wish, say, I fit, say, fit.
You too fine, past my mama, but that is impossible.
No.
Thumbs up to your mama, cause she made it possible.
She made it possible.
Girl, you do fine. My girl, I still believe, say, I fit, say, fit. You do fine past my mama, but that is impossible.
Oh,
give me the photocopy of your mama, carbon copy of your papa too. Girl, you do fine. Tell me who made it possible.
Your mama, your papa, your mama, your papa, yeah.
Only God made it possible.
Go ask your mama, your papa,
what is
your
the possibility?
Mama, your papa, yeah.
Baby girl, it is you that I see. From the eyes of the eagle, it's like impossibility. The people know they see, yeah, where I see ya. Your beauty is so pure and so clean from within that it feels like. And nobody understand where Zini be. Every time I go out, they find you kill she. I the free, I they get to love and speed when I deal with you. Everybody truly know now. Let me get up and stand up on and let it shine. Your beauty is divine. Can you do fine?
All
I need you by my side to be no wife. The mother of my child. So help me sing it.
Somebody say, ooh, girl.
Ooh, girl.
You are my African queen. The girl of my dream took me where I never been. You make my heart go ting-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
Girl, I don't wish, say, I fit, say, fit. You do fine past my mama, but that is impossible.
Oh,
thumbs up to your mama, cause she made it possible. Girl, you do fine, my girl, I still believe, say, I fit, say, fit. You do fine past my mama, but that is impossible.
Oh,
give me the photocopy of your mama, carbon copy of your papa too. Girl, it's too fine. Tell me who made it possible.
Your mama, your papa, your mama, your papa. Yeah.
Only God made it possible.
Go ask your mama, your papa.
What is the possibility?
Papa,
see, I'm a true-born African king. You are a true-born African queen. My mama born the rude boy African singer. So now who born this African beauty?
Now your mama, now your papa,
this no be small matter.
Are you feeling me too, baba?
Let me hear you say, ooh, girl.
Ooh, girl.
Hey, you are my African queen. The girl of my dream took me where I never been. You make my heart go ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
Girl, I don't wish, say, I fit, say, fit.
You do fine past my mama, but that is impossible.
Thumbs
up to your mama, cause she made it possible. Yeah, you do fine.
What is the possibility?
Girl, I still believe, say, believe, say, I fit, say, fit. You do fine past my mama, but that is impossible. Give me the photocopy of your mama, carbon copy of your papa too. Girl, you do fine. Girl, you do fine.
Girl, you
do fine.
Girl, you do fine.
That was Yvonne Shaka Shaka, Let Me Be Free. That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, Ekenu does not know who the leader is when it turns over. Everyone gets wet. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm David Berg.